Blog Talk Radio.
Well, aloha, everyone. Welcome once again to PWT Talks NXT. We're going to talk about the episode of NXT for July 22nd, 2020. I am your host. I'm Kelly Wells. You can find me all over social media at Spooky Milk, and I'm here with my usual gang of idiots. Tom, who are you?
I am at Tom Staup on Twitter. If you follow me, you know that I'm that person who actually thought that Extreme Rules was not just a good show, but a smart show. And if you don't follow me, then you should, because I'm that person that thought that Extreme Rules was not just a good show, but a smart show. So you get that kind of stuff from me at Tom Staup on Twitter.
Yeah. So if you did follow Tom, you probably stopped after he said that. It was, I won't forget Extreme Rules. I'll say that much.
Fair.
Nate, who are you?
What's going on, guys? At Nate Lindberg on Twitter. I write the NXT hits and misses that, typically drops Thursdays or Friday. And hey, while we're on the subject of checking things out, I actually got a website going, natelindberg.com. I've got links to this show. I got links to my other show. I got links to everything up there. Check it out. I got it going. It looks good.
In addition to this stuff, Tom and I also do a show that drops every Saturday called NXT 8 Years Back, which is what it sounds like because NXT started 8 years and a few weeks ago, and we are on week 6 of that this coming Saturday. That is a VIP podcast, although the first 2 episodes were dropped for free if you feel like listening to them, and if you like what you hear, it's fun. It's really fun looking back at that red letter time in NXT. And talking about it. So that's what we do. You can email us at the show, pwtorchnxt@gmail.com, if you want to ask us stuff. Some people asked us stuff this week, and we will answer that. If you want to call us, 515-605-9345, and do the star one or whatever they ask you to do if you want to be on, or you can just listen, as most do when they call in and listen to the show. Let's talk about the main event, which was, it went 13:31. It was kind of a match. It was more of a segment, more of an angle. Karrion Kross over Dominik Dijakovic. We knew that would happen. We didn't know that this would be a, brutalization of, Dijakovic's arm in order to draw Keith Lee to the ring in order for Karrion Kross to get what he really wants, which is that championship match. And if you're going to have him get to that match and have him remain a super heel, this, I think, was the way to do it. This was not anything you would write home about as far as a technical masterpiece. It was not that at all. But I thought that this did what it had to do, and it was interesting to see Lee in this more intense context, which I'm really liking that we're able to see him spread his wings and not just be happy-go-lucky John Cena and respond correctly to this is why Dijakovic was brought back for this couple of matches. Yeah, he had to come back and lose 2 matches, but he was the right guy to use for this angle because he's the closest thing that Lee really has to a friend in kayfabe. Tom, what'd you think about this main event?
Maybe I'm slow, and this is after multiple weeks of Brian Alston emailing and tweeting and trying to catch me up to speed. But even though I still have no memory of Keith Lee being the one to break Karrion Kross's hourglass, all I remember is Karrion Kross and then stepping on the broken hourglass. In retrospect, drilled into my mind that it did happen. It's kind of, even though I still feel and will always feel, I'm sure, that the Keith Lee title win was sort of a last minute plan to counter program AEW. It's kind of, all that considered, it's kind of poetic that they had Keith Lee break the hourglass because Karrion Kross targeting Adam Cole was all around the TikTok thing. And breaking the hourglass was like, no, that's not the plan anymore. I'm the plan now. And bringing that that abrupt change into storyline. So in retrospect, I can appreciate that now. As for the match tonight, yeah, I mean, I think the way that Dijakovic has come across in NXT thus far, this definitely feeling like, and you know, going into it as well, feeling like it's probably the last time we'll see him on the brand, I think this is the exact right way to use him. I didn't think it would get as brutal as it did, and I'm glad that it did, because what we ended up getting was Rocky IV, Creed versus Drago, with Drago in the Creed role. It did more than what it was supposed to do in furthering the angle between Cross and Lee by using Dijakovic very, very well. So, yeah, speaking generally about it, just definitely a thumbs up. And I'm very intrigued since I don't see Cross losing, but it's hard to imagine Lee losing in his first big-time defense. They've got me intrigued with these two big guys colliding.
I've been kind of trying to rack my brain thinking of what they'll do here. They really do seem booked into a corner, and I think I'm currently settling on Lee winning and retaining, but perhaps in a weird, I don't know if an O'Connor role, but some kind of roll-up that ends up working and is not necessarily conclusive, but they don't like to do the screw job finish on takeovers, so I think a Lee retention that leads to the feud continuing. I'm not even sure how else. I also think it's funny, Tom, that you are a walking Mandela effect, because you brought up Nelson Mandela last week with the Mandela effect. And this week you were so sure that Cole broke that hourglass. And I tell you what, your sureness that it was Cole really got to me, and I was like, maybe it was Cole. So I might be living in your timeline now. Nate on the main event.
So I kind of a lot of similar thoughts to you guys here. It was a great main event in terms of story and build. I think the match up until, I don't know, really the last few minutes, it wasn't really, like you said, it wasn't really anything groundbreaking or anything like that. It was just, two big hosses going at it, which, was great. I really liked the way that this was booked towards the end, really from the punt of the chair, the stairs rather, into Dijakovic's head, up right through the end with, the ending angle with Lee there. I really liked the way that was booked and the way that kind of progressing the story along between Lee and Karrion Kross. As far as Dijakovic goes, he's like, there's something about him that for me, like he's graced that main event level, a few times here, grazed that main event level a few times here. But it's like, there's one thing there that's something missing that keeps him out of like that main event spot for me from, that the world title spot for me. I do agree. This was a good spot for him to be in tonight. When, looking at the match on paper, I wasn't super excited about it. Kind of for a lot of those reasons, I just don't see Dijak as a main event level player. However, seeing the ending angle here tonight, I think that this was definitely the way to go. This is a good way to do it. Dijakovic's obviously the only one Lee is in Dijakovic. They've got that rivalry, that friendship that they've built up, over this past year or so. And I think this is a good way to do it. So yeah, again, same here. Thumbs up all around.
I would take you to task for calling him Dijak, but referee D.A. Brewer called him Dijak also in a very, very clear spot where he said, come on, break, Dijak. And I was like, oh, that's not what you're supposed to call him.
Yeah,
he did. Our friend J.B., Jared Behager, emailed us. It's J.B. from Detroit. I very rarely say this, but I think Dijakovic would be much better served at this point on Raw or SmackDown. I know they're big names and losses to Lee, and I'm figuring Cross are nothing to be ashamed of, but I can't remember the last time I feel like Dom had any real momentum in NXT. It's clear where his ceiling is, and at some point he'll already be defined down by losing to the main event upper mid-card of NXT on a regular basis. I think Vince will like his size and might slate him in the Intercontinental or U.S. title level, which isn't a bad spot to be. Also, I very rarely say this, but I feel like Vince inevitably shortening his name to just Dijak will actually be an improvement. As always, love the show. I'll tell you what, if he shortens his name to Dijak, it'll certainly be easier for me to recap his name. But, of course, if he does that on the main roster, it won't come up. Typing his name is secretly my least favorite thing to do when I do the recaps. I do think also that Dijakovic will do better on the main roster if he goes there. I think that's a home that makes more sense for him. Right now, he's one of many high work rate guys in a real work rate show. And on the main roster, I think that he can, I think he might still end up being a gatekeeper, and I wouldn't be surprised if he was a heel gatekeeper, but I'm very interested to see how he'd be used there. Or if he'd just totally stall out and Vince wouldn't see anything in him, because whoever knows? But yeah, I actually, JB, would say I don't think that Dijakovic would necessarily have come back to NXT TV until they realized they had a really good way to start telling that Karrion Kross story. I genuinely think his time might have been done because we hadn't seen him in weeks. All right, you can call us 515-605-9345. And our friend Darrell from Georgia did just that. So as we normally do after we go to the main event, we are going to go to the phone lines. And Darrell, what'd you think?
How you guys doing today? Hope you all doing well.
Yeah, not bad. Obviously a frog in my throat that I didn't know about until I started doing the show, so that's fun.
I understand that. I hate those also. But just to reassure y'all, yeah, he broke the hourglass the day he stepped, that time when he stepped out and challenged Adam Cole afterwards. And when he went backstage the next segment, when they came from commercial, he's backstage and the hourglass popped up in front of him, and Scarlet Bordeaux walked beside him, and he just threw it down and crashed it. And then you see the camera pan back to where Killer Kross shoes come in the camera. So it was that same show where that happened. Where he,
hey, I remember it.
Yeah,
so Nate's got your back, so he remembers.
Yeah, that's the same show. But just watching the main event tonight, I like what they did. I like the Rocky theme. I think they panned on him too long when it came back too many times, because I think they were doing a time thing. So, but again, that brings me back to what I didn't like, that they switched the titles in the first place. I understand I'm liking Keith Lee run, but for the monster to be a monster, I don't think you can defeat the monster in his first try for the title, because it wouldn't mean that much, especially if he goes back and try to challenge for it again. You have to do even a bigger build just to build that monster back up. And I really hated that they had to do Keith Lee right now, which they could have built up and made that a mega match where some, like for Rumble or even Mania takeover or something like that, even though we don't know if you might get that far. But just, I like what they're doing now. And I think they needed to do this, and they had to do this all with Keith Lee, but I would have wished that they would have stuck to their plans and didn't with the counter booking to AEW. What were your guys' thoughts about what I just said?
Yeah, I think we're pretty on board there. I talk often about monsters not being very useful if you job them too quickly. And we've seen that before. Kane had a really long, very good career, and I always say if you can beat Kane, do it. But he lost early on when he challenged Undertaker, and because he lost early on, the unstoppable monster who loses is not worth a lot. And he's a guy who, if he'd really been utilized that first couple of years, maybe been one of the anchors. On the other hand, I get it. They had a really deep talent pool at the time, and Kane wasn't the guy to run with the championship. But the point is, he's wrestled for 20 years, and he was world champion for 5 months. And with Braun Strowman, he still would never have sniffed that world championship. We don't even know if he would have been booked at WrestleMania. He would have been booked. He would have done something, but we don't know what it would have been. And we know he wouldn't have walked out the champion because Roman Reigns would have. And Braun lost some big matches early on, and I thought, if they don't do this now, they'll never do it. And I was saying he would never be world champion. And now it's just really hard to know what that would have, what would have come to that. And now I know a lot of people are saying that championship run is flat as a result. I like that we're getting a takeover main event that really is hard to predict, but I'm sure that it's Sophie's choice. We're going to be disappointed by something at the end of that match. Tom?
Braun would have been selling a Snickers bar on WrestleMania if it weren't for Roman Reigns. I totally agree with Darrell. The best I can say is that it's at least if Cross is going to lose here, and I didn't even realize I would be at a point just a couple weeks ago. I didn't even realize I would be at a point where I'd be speculating that it would be possible for Cross to lose his first big match. At least it's not going to end up being a hot shot. He's now been on TV for a little while, and he's had a handful of matches, all wins, of course. So at least it wouldn't be he's only on TV for 2 weeks, and he's immediately propelled to the championship. Now, I would have been okay with that, too, because the presentation was so strong out of the gate that it seemed like he was just going to be this force of nature that swoops in and ends Adam Cole's reign. So I would not have complained about that either. But yeah, the formula, that's not the word I'm looking for, but the mixture has changed enough here that Cross losing in his first big fight might be a possibility. And yeah, you bring up the Braun example. Darrell mentions AEW. They've done that with every single one of their monsters thus far. And they've had quite a handful. It's just they keep on coming out of the woodwork. So I agree with you, Darrell. It's a bit of a conundrum, but like Kelly suggests, maybe it'll just be a roll up or something.
And you know what else should have been obvious to me is the other way they can do it is through Ciampa. You can have Ciampa come back at TakeOver and cost him that match.
Steal my thunder.
Oh, did I steal it from you?
You
I
did.
Like, as soon as it came to me, I'm like, wait a second, why? Of course that's what they're going to do. Go ahead, Nate, and with whatever thunder you've got left.
No, I mean, that's pretty much it. I was, you know, everything you guys just touched on, I'm completely in agreement with, so I'm not really going to, you know, harp on it too much. But yeah, that was really what I was going to bring up is, you know, that's another way they can get out of this. You know, Ciampa could come back, cost him the title, you know, and then obviously that allows Keith Lee to, you know, hold on to the title and you know, keep this feud or keep his title reign strong. I mean, he, like, you know, like we've been talking about, he can't lose his first title defense. There's no way. You know, and then this will obviously continue that feud between Ciampa and Cross. And I think that's probably the best way to get out of this. So that's at least my two cents.
Yeah, losing the first defense. I mean, of course, the caveat is that this is his first big defense. That's part of, I forget whether I mentioned it out loud, but that's part of why I felt like they did the TV defense against Dijak last week. And I've been saying Dijak.
Oh yeah, first big defense.
It would be funny if the sensible re-shortening of his name happened, because it would be like, oh, we're giving this guy back his real name. So this way they can say that Keith Lee at least had a successful defense. But I mean, you look at Johnny Gargano. I forget whether he lost it on TV or Johnny Gargano and Sami Zayn. I forget whether they. I didn't mean to say lost. I forget whether they defended it on TV. But both of them lost in their first big defense. Granted, Keith Lee is a big guy wrestler, not like Sami Zayn and Gargano. So we're talking about a different type of beast here. But yeah.
All right, Darrell, what else did you see this week?
Okay, and speaking on what y'all was saying, if Ciampa would come back, I would like if this was a rematch, if he comes back, if they give this a two-match series, because lately they haven't been giving people rematches for titles in NXT, so I think that's a perfect way to build up to it. Even if Keith Lee loses his first match, you keep him strong enough where you can build up to a second match, and then Ciampa comes back, because having Ciampa interfere, I think you would be switching and making him into kind of a heel, especially that he got crushed the first time that they came back. But coming back and saving Keith Lee in a second match that Keith Lee just lost and doing similar angle to what they did tonight, I think is a perfect way. And both Sami Zayn and Johnny Gargano lost their first big so that's it, NXT storyline. Now with tonight, I like that they built up, which we knew that they was gonna have Keith Lee give up the title and stuff like that. I like that they build up these triple threats that's going to be happening, and so they can have a key point to get people to watch the shows and stuff like that and things. So I would want to ask you guys, with Bronson Reed winning, which I think they kind of told that earlier with that promo that they had all three, they kind of led to him winning. What do you guys seeing with those other four picks? And should a surprise name that we don't think might be in it, like somebody coming back or even somebody like Pete Dunne maybe coming over, since they are letting people come over. If you think about like NFL and NBA players who was overseas, they're allowing them to come over. So I wonder, do you see something like that happening with one of the other four spots, and how did you guys feel about Bronson Reed and that match tonight?
Mid-show main event, and the main event, really, the main event match. Anyway, Bronson Reed versus Roderick Strong versus Johnny Gargano, this match to advance to the ladder match at TakeOver 30. Reed goes over, he hit his frog splash on both guys and then ended up pinning Roddy. This went 20 minutes and 49 seconds on a very, very wrestling-heavy show of NXT. This had 65-plus minutes, including those that were on during commercial. So big night for Reed. You know, they did the Mackenzie Mitchell spot with all three guys early on, and Reed got enough shine that I was like, well, they really made me think it could be him. And part of me said, why would he even get this spot unless he was going to win it? Now that he's won, I genuinely believe he's going to win the ladder match. I don't think, I know that's crazy, but I don't think they put that kind of steam behind a guy who just recently was doing very quick jobs to Karrion Kross without a bigger plan in place. You really can't half-ass it with these guys who have been lower card gatekeepers and things like that. I really think they're poised to go all the way with him, with the giant caveat that if he's not good on TV in the next handful of weeks, they might change their minds. He wasn't great on the mic, but he was great in the ring. I thought this was an excellent match. Strong and Gargano were their super, super just smooth selves. Roddy brought out his dart of a hand, and he put a lot of red on Bronson Reed's chest. We also got a couple of emails about this, as you would think. Bruce Hazelwood said, I can't be the only extremely excited that Bronson Reed, NXT's resident thick boy, is finally getting some kind of push, right? Depending on who else qualifies for the match, I feel like he would make for a great North American champion because he can really mesh well with any style. His top rope splash looks like literal murder each time, and it's so good. Thoughts on Reed as potential North American champion? Also, where is this Robert Stone Aaliyah thing heading? Please don't tell me he's going to recruit Mercedes Martinez. He emailed me early in the show before this actually happened. Is this the zenith of Stone and Aaliyah? Was it even worth putting them together and on television in the first place? We will remember, go VIP, stay safe, and wear your damn masks. Bruce Lee, PhD from Seattle. Got an email from Tim Scott. Wow, I got to tell you guys, I never thought I'd say this, but the first hour of this week's show was so god-awful to me that I actually thought Raw was better. Fortunately, things picked up during Shotzi's match, but I'm really getting concerned for the future of this show, which they seem to be dumbing down more and more with each passing week. The highlight of the show for me was the triple threat match for the North American title shot, but even then, as great as the performances were, I couldn't help but feeling like Johnny and Roddy were booked to be gatekeepers for someone whose ceiling within the WWE ecosystem seems about as high as Killian Dane. I guess I'm just feeling frustrated because I hate watching these guys go out and continually work their butts off to essentially just run in place with no hope of them ever succeeding beyond a certain level. But what do you guys think? Is the system broken, or am I worrying for nothing? Both. I don't know that this is the time to panic. I was actually panicking about 4 weeks ago because of the way that the TV show was being presented. I thought that it was getting further away then, and is now actually the parabola is coming back down, and it's not so bad right now for me. There's still some silly stuff, and we'll cover some of that stuff that was in the first hour. But I thought it was okay. I certainly didn't think it was awful. I just thought it was maybe committing the sin of not being memorable. But yeah, watching guys run in place with no hope of succeeding beyond a certain level. I mean, I feel like that's WWE in a nutshell to some degree. So, and pro wrestling, it's not just them. So, Nate, why don't you talk about that main event? Oh, and the match we're going to get next week is Finn Balor, Dexter Lumis, and Timothy Thatcher. I've got Thatcher winning that one, I think, but I guess we'll see. Nate?
Yeah, I think I'm with you on that, with Thatcher going over in that one, especially where they've really been building him up quite a bit over the past few weeks. Really a month or so with the whole, you know, Thatcher's Thatch Can and backstage vignettes, and yeah, he's been his couple wins here over Oney Lorcan, which obviously we'll talk about in a little bit. But we're here to talk about the triple threat here. So I really enjoyed this match. NXT has kind of started to change my perception on multi-man matches, especially odd number men, triple threat, five, you know, fatal five ways, something like that. As I've talked about many times, you get a multi-man match like this, and a lot of times you just get, you know, one or multiple people kind of sleeping outside the ring, and that really wasn't the case here. There's a couple moments like that, essentially the story of the match was, you know, Gargano and Strong trying to, overcome Bronson Reed, the resident thick boy, and take him out. And, you know, they did at a couple points in the match, but I don't feel like it was really overpowering. I didn't feel like Bronson Reed was ever, you know, out of the match, and he was out of sight, out of mind. I think they did a really good job of incorporating all three people in the match throughout. Same here. When they were doing that backstage vignette, you know, Rod interviewing with Roddy, and then you see Gargano and Reed kind of, you know, interject themselves. I got the same vibe. I'm like, they're really putting the shine on Reed. And, you know, I wrote down in the hits and misses, like, Gargano and Strong basically just played that little segment off like the NXT North American Championship was old hat. Like, you know, they'd both won it before. Oh yeah, of course I'm going to win this match. They're just really cocky because, you know, they're former champions. And Reed did not come across that way. He came across as, you know, that up-and-comer, that newbie with the fire behind him that, you know, really wants to make a name for himself. And that's what he did. He went out there. I feel like this match was really built for Bronson Reed to shine. He got there was a lot of times he was taking, you know, offense from both men at the same time, and you know, but he was doing a great job building sympathy, doing a great job at retaliating against that offense, and really showing that he could kind of hang. For somebody that was, you know, just doing quick jobs, you know, carrying cross and kind of even off TV for quite some time before that, I am kind of glad to see them doing something new with him. I've been high on him ever since first really seeing him. Really back when I first started doing this podcast with you guys, I think it's really when he first kind of came into my periphery. And I've been high on him. I think he's like, I mean, I forget who it was that said it in the email, but you know, that his top rope offense literally does look like murder. So yeah, you can't really get better than that in terms of believability. So I want to see obviously who else is going to be in this ladder match for the North American title before I definitively say that I think, you know, it's going to be Bronson Reed that comes out victorious here. But heck, he went over two of the top guys in NXT tonight. So he's definitely get a shot.
Tom, mid-show main event and upcoming questions about this ladder match.
Yeah, I loved that exchange between Johnny and Roddy. I don't know where to fit that in what I'm about to spew out. So I'll just say that amused me.
I hate you too.
Exactly. I agree that the answer is both. NXT as we fell in love with it, would not have had people like Johnny and Roddy still around to do this kind of stuff. But tonight's show was, and I'm of course, I'm with you, Kelly. Like 4 weeks ago, I definitely was a little bit in panic mode. Like, oh man, is NXT really changing its identity now to be competitive? But tonight's episode in particular, after a strong one last week as well, felt so much more in the recognizable NXT identity. Going back to the kind of stuff that we're covering on NXT 8 years back, this episode felt so focused on building the future and not focused on competing for ratings. And people will criticize it for not prioritizing competing for ratings, but I prefer NXT when it is not worrying about that kind of thing. So I really liked tonight's show for that reason. And it was never more evident than in this match, which was so focused on spotlighting Bronson Reed, who I just 2 weeks ago, I want to say, called the babyface Killian Dane. Just, he's found his spot. This is where he's going to be. And already it's looking like they're finding a higher ceiling for him. I don't think he's going to win the ladder match. But then to, I guess that sort of answers Bruce's question. I'm still at a point where I could take or leave Bronson Reed, but, he acquitted himself extremely well in this match, albeit, you know, with the very sound glue of Roddy and Johnny holding it, together. But yeah, he'll be the base in the ladder match. Always good to have when you have a ladder match with, more than just two people in it. And for Darrell's question of whether or not we'll get a surprise in the match, honestly, while you guys were talking, I'm scrolling up and down the rosters, and I don't foresee it. I feel like the biggest name who is going to get into the match, contrary to you guys predicting Thatcher, I'm thinking Finn. Even before they showed Finn's promo tonight, I was thinking this is Finn's to lose. It's his run so far back in NXT has not been snake bit, but it's felt like they have wanted, by constantly putting him in the overrun, constantly putting him in big programs, trying to use him to raise the stock of NXT UK. And this goes to actually answer a question that we've had on deck from Bruce as well, just in case we're light on subject matter for a show, and that's been sitting on our inbox, but we haven't forgotten about it. As to who the face of NXT is. And I'm not sure if this would be the case anymore, but when he sent that, my answer was going to be Finn, because they always put him in those situations. And again, the run hasn't been snake bit, but a lot of stuff hasn't panned out. And I feel like this is their opportunity to say, you know what, screw it. Let's just put the damn North American title on him. And then he'll be more of a featured act on the show. I'm sure, you know, it's a triple threat match. They can get away with Thatcher losing in some fashion. I don't foresee any surprises, and I also think that perhaps some of the people who lose will end up getting into the match anyway. Like, I could see Johnny Gargano being put in like a last chance triple threat to make it in.
Oh, sure, that last chance gauntlet like they did with the women last month or whatever it was, and that's how Dakota Kai snuck in after taking out Shotzi. Interestingly here, what you say about Finn, like, it goes right into my idea that, and I kind of have to eat my words here, because I was saying the monster or the big name or whatever can't lose too much right away. If you don't go all the way with him right away, you might not be able, and that might actually be true for Finn. So maybe he does need to win this. Darrell, what else did you see this week?
Okay, and just to go with y'all with that, I think that North American title going to have five, maybe at least four new people who haven't really got a shot at it or really been in the scene for it. I think you might have Cameron Grimes, Priest, Damian Priest, and Thatcher as the three guys who they've been building up week by week, just going off of last week's strong show and all of that. And you got the dark horse with Thick Boy. Then yeah, they might do the redemption where you can have a big week where you have Finn, Roddy Strong, Johnny Gargano, compete for it just so you can pop a rating and you can hype that type of match that Tom was speaking of. Or just like if I think maybe, because that would be a perfect, if you could get Pete Dunne to come back and introduce him in, and then if you let, that can lead on to a feud for the North American title if you let Timothy Thatcher, who I think will win the match, just showing what they did with him today. So that's what I'm hoping. So that will be my five. And going today, I like a few of the video segments that they did today, especially the one with Swerve setting up maybe a title match maybe next week or the week after. And I like what they did with Dakota Kai. I guess she's going to be – she might not be the challenger at TakeOver, but it looked like she's going to be one of these next week's challenges where they build up for Io Shirai. How did you guys like those two segments, and what do you guys think about that?
I really like what they're doing with the videos lately. I loved the Swerve one as well. This was kind of almost in the arena of mini documentary. This was the kind of thing that, you know, this is a lovely thing to have in their back pocket. Every now and then, I'm convinced that they should just do these when a wrestler shows up. But if they did it every time a wrestler showed up, then they'd be lost in the shuffle and they wouldn't be important anymore. This is a great back pocket move for wrestlers that need a little bit more shine or have been lost in the shuffle or have been defined down or even worse in the middle, which is just a really terrible place to be, is trading wins and losses. Yes, this got the kayfabe storyline of Swerve facing Escobar across. It also told us more about Swerve than all of the things we've seen about Swerve put together. So as I said in my recap, another W for Jeremy Borash and Tegan Nox on deck, please. Okay. Tom, what'd you think?
I'll be honest. I don't remember the Dakota Kai one. I remember her doing one, but nothing about it stuck out to me. So there. I'm glad
she's my favorite wrestler, and I didn't really remember it that much. So I guess it didn't really stick to me either.
Yeah, which isn't really like a negative. They're furthering the storyline. That's fine. It didn't need to be like a major sticking point of the show. The Swerve one, it is hard for me to complain about getting more Swerve, and I agree. This is more Swerve development than we've gotten since he came to NXT. And I know that he has professional audio equipment in his apartment because of his podcasting. But for as much as I have followed Swerve, and, you know, I'm not his next door neighbor or anything, so I'm ready to be proven wrong, I don't know of any real aspect of him being a music producer or recorder of any kind. So this feels like a kayfabe character. And because he's a black wrestler, then I think, oh, they just took this guy who's a cool, like he just oozes coolness and he's black, so let's make him a record producer. It feels very stereotypical. And maybe that's like too harsh of a thing to jump to, but it just feels like it feels way too obvious. And like they had this, I'm going to say back pocket because you were saying back pocket. They had this in their back pocket, like, oh, next time we need to give a character to a cool black guy, we're going to use this. And Swerve, as Kelly, I think you would agree, he doesn't need anything more than just like, this guy is so freaking cool. When he enters the room, no one is cooler than him in any room that he walks into. And I don't know if you really need to detail it more than that. Although I'm not sure how you do that with words if you want to do that in a video package where the character is talking. So yeah, I guess I just felt like this character that they're giving him just falls into a lot of tropes that WWE has fallen into over the years. And maybe I'm being hypocritical because I was praising the segment last week where the Latino wrestlers are being portrayed as sort of like drug dealer types or drug syndicate types. But the strength of that package is more what I was complimenting. It was put together so well. This one was recycling a lot of old footage and more generic interview type stuff. But yeah, I guess I've made my point, sort of a long way of saying like, okay, I'm happy to get more Swerve, but is this the more Swerve that I wanted? I feel like it might be defining him down to give him this character.
We see, and none of that stood out to me because I don't pay attention to wrestlers' real lives all that much, and I didn't know that that was not a thing. I just assumed that this was kind of bringing the reality of Shane Strickland into the character of Isaiah Swerve Scott. So,
and maybe I'm wrong. I will say that the way he spoke about it was very believable. So that part of it definitely came through. It made me doubt, like, okay, even though I've been following his Instagram since I knew that he was a thing when I discovered him in MLW, obviously he was a thing before that, but that's when I learned of him and came to admire him. I don't remember him once posting about it, but I feel like he would. But anyway, yeah.
And maybe it's that pet project that he wanted to kind of bring out on his own terms, but they're like, hey, can we use this because it's interesting? And he was like, I wasn't really ready to put that in the world. You got me wondering. Swerve, call us. Nate, go ahead.
Yeah, I really like this video package personally. Like you, Kelly, I mean, I don't really pay super close attention to a lot of, you know, the wrestlers' real lives. I mean, I follow them on Twitter and stuff, but you know, I'm not really, really paying attention. So I kind of took it in the same way that, you know, it's probably just taking his, you know, aspects of his real life and putting it out there for, you know, for us to see and, you know, maybe dialing it up a little bit. But, you know, that was at least the way I took it. So, you know, I don't know if it's true or not, but hey, whether or not it was, it certainly came across believable, you know, that he's into, you know, music production and things like that. So, but no, I mean, I'm glad to get more Swerve. I'm glad that they're finally kind of giving him a little bit more, you know, and like you guys said, I mean, it was a bit of a generic video package, but at least they're giving him some more story. You're kind of giving him a spotlight here. He's obviously somebody that, you know, we've all had our eye on since he's, you know, stepped through the doors of NXT. You know, you guys especially had, you know, eyes on him longer than that. You know, I think he's somebody that's really going to stand out if given the opportunity. I'm really happy to see him kind of get that, you get that spotlight. So, but yeah, I mean, everything else you guys touched on, I kind of agree with as well. So in the interest of time, I'm going to shut up.
Okay. Darrell, is there anything else that stood out this week?
Okay, last thing and last question. And also, yes, Swerve does do music. The guy who in the Swerve City podcast that he does, that's what he do. He raps, and that's what they have in common, even though they're friends.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Cool, okay. All right, well, thanks for mentioning that, Darrell. So that negates my argument then. In that case, yeah, all right. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. And last thing, I know some people might not like the Robert Stone brand, but the last 2 weeks have been hits for me. I kind of like that they let Shotzi come in and try to run him over, then Mercedes comes out and kick her in the face, then she set the record straight in making him legitimate by how she talking to him and just using him as a flunky, him and Aaliyah. So as many things that they can do with that, I like what they did. And that's easy way for her to be able to slid into a rivalry, which we had talked about with you guys, with her and Rhea Ripley, maybe at TakeOver or something like that, to see who's going to be the next challenger, or even before TakeOver, and see who might get a shot at the TakeOver match. So I like what they did with it. It's interesting, and I want to see what they do more with it. And I like how she made him and just told him his role. You just gonna get me matches and you're gonna do what I say, and you're not gonna overstep, because if you overstep, I'm gonna break both of your legs. And I think that's a great way to keep building on to her. So what you guys thought about that? And that's my last question.
All right, Darrell, thanks as always. I really dug this too. This whole thing is working for me, and we were correct in thinking that this was coming back to Stone versus Ripley. I think we were correct. I think we will get that eventually from Mercedes going that. After the match with Shotzi and Aaliyah, that went 4 minutes and 40 seconds. Aaliyah really just continuing to acquit herself well in these shorter matches, and I think really justifies the time spent on her and the fact that they stood with her when she could have been in any one of these rounds of cuts. I dig that she's still around, and I think she's doing some pretty fun stuff. I really liked the way that she and Robert Stone couldn't contain their happiness when Mercedes Martinez joined the brand, because they've been turned down so much. And I agree completely that the main reason this worked for me, even though I was saying Mercedes is probably a solo act, is that she set the terms. I thought that of the dynamic is exactly what this group needed. And I think she will benefit the brand, and the brand will benefit her. And so she can stay a heel and not run the risk of becoming a cool badass. But she'll be that, she'll be the final boss, and Aaliyah can be, every group needs a fall guy. The Heenan family had their Haku or their Barbarian. Normally Haku by the end was the one doing the jobs, but, and then they'll work their way towards Mercedes. And I dare say I like where this is headed as well. And even the silly bits, they continue to just work for me so far. Even though they weren't a longtime staple of NXT. So Blackheart over Aaliyah in 440, and Mercedes Martinez joins the brand, huh?
Yeah, likewise, I'm optimistic. I don't believe you've mentioned it on the podcast in great detail, so I'll fully credit you with when in our Skype chat we were still talking about.
Oh yeah, that wasn't on the show. That was something I said to you guys aside. Okay, go ahead.
But I really like your idea when we were sort of batting around the usual, like, gosh, we just don't know what the hell they're going to do with Robert Stone. You said, I think I finally figured it out, that he is going to be like Heenan to Hogan. The wrestlers themselves aren't really in a long-term feud with Hogan. Heenan is. Heenan's the real heel. And now Ripley is the Hogan sending wrestlers, with Stone sending wrestlers after her. So I really latched onto that when you said that. I thought that was brilliant, and this is the first evidence that that they may be continuing in that direction. And yeah, Bruce asked about this, worrying about Mercedes joining, and at the time he sent it, I was worried about it as well. But because she set the terms, not only does that intrigue me because it will change the dynamic with how Stone actually factors into matches that are under the Robert Stone brand, but it also helps Mercedes' character, just to put out there, like, I don't give a damn about the paperwork and the busy work about getting to where I want to get. I just want to kick people in the damn face. And she's not interested. I think, you know, even though we haven't known where it's going, it's become amusing enough week after week to see Robert Stone humiliated in different ways. It's sort of, if I don't want to invoke the term draw, it's at least an appeal every week in NXT. Like, how is Robert Stone, like, you know, oh my God, they killed Kenny. Like, how are they going to humiliate Robert Stone this week? So that's become amusing. And this probably doesn't take away from that, because Mercedes has no interest in Robert Stone. She just wants him to do the paperwork and whatnot and get her the matches. So I think that we'll still probably see him getting humiliated in various ways. Match was fine. I agree, Aaliyah. She has really earned her place on TV, and her improvements. She's not like the greatest in the world, but her improvements really show, and she looks like she belongs out there. She didn't need the Robert Stone thing to be out there, but it's a fine excuse. And Shotzi, I always feel like saying that every time Shotzi's out there, I like her more and more, and that's just because, just between the bells. There's always something about the presentation that sort of makes me clench my teeth a little bit. Like when she was making her entrance and she said, "Welcome to the ball pit," I was like, all right, okay, I think I like that. And then when she's doing the Jeff Hardy leg drop thing and she says it again, screams it in Aaliyah's face, I was like, ooh, okay. Yeah. Maybe not that time.
The two-year-old made you laugh once, and then they couldn't stop saying that thing.
And her finish, they just call it the diving senton, and I'm like, call that the ball pit. You know, I don't know, like, why not? Just invokes diving into a ball pit at McDonald's. I don't know. But yeah, like, there's so much that I continue liking more and more about the Shotzi act, and there's always something like that promo of her in a tank where I'm just like, ooh. step back. But yeah, no, she's strong and promising. So yeah.
You know, something about the way that you said that you just reiterated what they were, the dynamic about, you know, Mercedes just wanting someone to do the paperwork and the crap she doesn't want to do. It just made me think of Nelson Muntz and the bully on The Simpsons. And I think it was Martin, where they're in the neighboring town. And Martin says to the neighboring bully, "I would never hang out with him normally." And I feel like we're going to see Mercedes do "I would never hang out with him normally" kind of moment. And I think I'd be okay with it. Nate, on the ladies.
So I think I'll start with the match here. I think this might be probably one of Aaliyah's better matches that I've seen. You guys kind of touched on it. You know, she's vastly improved since I remember. I mean, we saw her on that show Breaking Ground a few years back, where they, you know, kind of went behind the scenes of a few NXT hopefuls and followed their careers. And she's the only one that I can actually remember that was on that show for some reason. Yeah, I mean, I remember following her there, and I remember thinking she had a good look and everything, but I was like, I don't think she's got it. I don't think she's going to make it. And I'm glad to see she's proved me wrong. I really am. Because, you know, she's like you said, she's not the best. She's not the best wrestler in the world, but she's really, really come a long way. I mean, that, you know, it was a Northern Light suplex or something like that tonight. I mean, she had this bridge on it that just looked really, really crisp, really good. I don't know.
Well, because,
I really,
because yeah. Morrow is Morrow, the Aurora Borealis suplex.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
That's what it was. That's
there was a suplex and then a bridge and a suplex, a float over, and then the Northern Lights. It was really cool. It was fun.
Yeah, no, it was good. It was a good sequence. And that certainly stood out to me. So I just kinda wanted to give Aaliyah props there, because she's gone from, in my mind, somebody that is in the business that was just like, ooh, I don't know about that, to somebody that I feel like has really earned her spot. So that I always like seeing somebody prove me wrong. So happy with that. Shotzi, I'm a huge fan of Shotzi. Yeah, she goes over the top a little bit. I felt exactly the same way about those ball pit comments. I liked it the first time she said it. The second time I was like, maybe back off a little bit. It's nitpicks at best for me anyway. I really dig that character. I can see, like, as a kid, like, I would really, really gravitate towards something like that, personally. So all for it. Robert Stone, he has gone from probably my least favorite thing of NXT to, I don't know. I don't want to say it's gone to be like my favorite thing in NXT, but it's coming close. I really like that Kenny analogy from South Park. You know, how are they going to kill Kenny each week? How are they going to run Robert Stone over with the tank each week? Or what crazy shenanigans is he going to get into? I'm digging it. I'm really digging it. He's certainly won me over with his just over the top acting and just the whole shtick. It's so stupid that it's awesome, and I don't know, I love it. And I also love the addition of Mercedes Martinez to the Robert Stone brand. At the end of this match, when Martinez came out and, you know, big booted Shotzi in the face, I had very similar thoughts to you guys. Like, oh no, I'm a little, what are they doing? Like, are they going to have her join the Robert Stone brand? Like, you know, as much as I like the Robert Stone brand, I don't feel like it was something, at least at the time. I'm like, I don't think this is really something for Mercedes Martinez. But then we got to that backstage little skit there where they cross paths and, you know, she joins the brand. And I think it was Kelly that just said this, you know, the fact that she demanded, you know, she made these demands, like, here, you're going to get me matches. You're going to do all the paperwork. I'm going to worry about killing people. That right there is what sold me on it, because it does. It completely changes the dynamic of that relationship. You know, it almost turns it into, I definitely like the Heenan reference. I was going to kind of do like a Brock Lesnar, Paul Heyman thing, but like a much more cowardly version of Paul Heyman, cowardly version of Paul Heyman. Overall, I really, really like it. I'm
I've been waiting to see Mercedes Martinez finally make her, you know, impact on the roster here. I have a feeling, you know, probably COVID. I think it was COVID, if I'm remembering our conversation from last week as to why she wasn't on the show. You know, just wanting to, you know, self-isolate and quarantine herself to be safe, and I don't blame her. So, you know, I'm glad to see she's finally, you know, after so long on the independents, she's here, she's in the WWE, you know, in NXT. I feel like this is really a great spot for her. She's not going to flounder on the main roster. It, you know, she's not going to have kind of a debut like Shayna, you know, and she's back. I know they're building her up a little bit now, but I hated the way they built her up after she left NXT. So, yeah, anyway, I'm starting to talk about Shayna Baszler, but she has nothing to do with what I'm talking about. So we know that I've gone too long.
All right, so I'm going to throw you two matches at once, and hopefully you will somehow keep that short as well. So we got two straightforward, hard-hitting matches, Dexter Lumis versus Killian Dane, Oney Larkin versus Timothy Thatcher, Lumis over Dane in 10:41, Timothy Thatcher over Oney Larkin in a minute longer than that. These seemed like just basic matches with some issue attached, both kind of grudge matches, but nothing crazy. But then we found out that they were essentially a kind of a preview. They and Finn Balor will go next week in that triple threat match. So Lumis over Dane and Thatcher over Larkin. Nate, anything on those two matches?
So I'll start with Dane and Lumis. So, you know, I said this exact thing to describe the main event, but this was just really two big hosses going at it. So Dexter Lumis, for as much as I like the character, I feel like he's miscast as a babyface. I really would like to see everything that they have done with Dexter Lumis since, you know, he's kind of, you know, re-debuted here, because it's been in the entire Dexter Lumis angle has been in the no crowd era. I really would like to see how the crowd would have reacted to everything that's gone on, because you go back to like the Roderick Strong angle, and I mean, he clearly was like playing this deranged lunatic, but he was the good guy and Roderick Strong was the bad guy, and it just seemed really miscast. And I kind of just feel that way overall about Lumis. I like it. I really like the character and I like what they're doing with him, but I wish that he was leaning heel and he was feuding with faces. So that kind of took a little bit away from me for this match, just simply because I don't like that, the alignment. However, I still think it was a good match. You know, it certainly built up Dexter Lumis as a more credible villain. He's a babyface and I'm calling him a villain. Build him up as a credible monster here. You know, Killian Dane, I mean, he's been in that gatekeeper role. I mean, I kind of expected him to lose this match because, you know, Lumis has been the one getting the shine on him lately. So it kind of seemed like this was Lumis's match to win. You know, it wasn't anything groundbreaking by any stretch for either guy, but I think it was a great opening match for the show. You kind of kick things off and set a tone for the night. So, you know, I gave it a hit, but I wouldn't call it two thumbs up. I'd say maybe a thumbs up and a half. But, you know, it was good. The other match, which now I'm forgetting, was, oh,
Thatcher,
yeah, Orkin and Thatcher. As you guys know, I'm a huge fan of both of these guys. So, you know, I don't think this was nearly as good as their first match. And I don't think this was as long as the first match either, if I'm not mistaken. But
I think this one was about 2 minutes longer.
Oh, was it?
Yep.
Okay.
So.
All right. Okay. Well, maybe it was because I liked the first match better. It seemed longer. I don't know. But that's, you know, that said, I still enjoyed this match. You know, this style of wrestling isn't for everybody. I feel like it also isn't really for the main audience of NXT. I could be wrong, but I know, you know, a lot of the main audience of NXT, you know, does and kind of enjoy, you know, the more high work rate and flippy stuff and all that, which you're not going to see out of these guys. This is the technical wrestling, you know, chain wrestling, mat wrestling, and at its finest, if I might add. You know, personally, all for it. Love these guys. So this one gets two thumbs up for me, even if I didn't like it as good as the first one.
Yeah, I dug Thatcher and Lorcan pretty well. I was surprised it went as long as it did. I thought that this would be a more definitive win and then he'd move on, but he still grabbed a handful of tights, Thatcher did. So, but whatever, I'm all for heels cheating a little bit. The question is, will they now give Oney a third match? And if they do, will he have to win that one because he's already 0-2? I'm not sure. Loomis over Dane, I got to say, man, I think Loomis is perfectly cast as a babyface. I think in this day and age, this character as a heel is too silly, and that anything you get out of him is going to be as a face. It's a weird character to do, period. And I really, really, one of the major reasons I'm missing the crowd right now is because I just wish I knew how they would react to Loomis. Tom?
That's exactly it with me, too. Sorry. Go ahead, Tom.
Thatcher and Lorcan, I hate sounding like I'm vouching for 50-50 booking, but I was hoping that Lorcan would win so this could go to like a best of seven series or something. I just want to keep seeing these guys beating the crap out of each other. I liked their last match. I preferred this one because it told more of a story. Oney was already more enraged than he was before. And I was planning on saying like, oh, and for Oney, you don't want to piss him off because rage just makes him more focused. And just as I was thinking that, he took his eyes off the ball and got himself pinned. But the story of him just constantly trying to go back to Thatcher's own arm lock, I really enjoyed. And it just seemed super vindictive. And it kept on playing into my Project Mayhem theory that I detailed last week that I'm not going to get. But it made me want that even more. As for Loomis and Dane, this is the strength of Killian Dane and why I like him as a heel gatekeeper so much. This is Loomis, Thatcher that I am not sold on, who I do not find entertaining, in a ridiculous excuse for a grudge with him like drawing a picture of Killian Dane getting coffee poured on him that was barely exhibited in the segment last week, a segment that didn't even revolve around those characters. And yet, this is the best that I've seen Loomis so far because Dane did such a good job. Dane is always just completely despicable in there. And he just does a great job of playing that hateable heel. And he was the perfect person for Loomis to get his stuff in on. And I thought that Loomis translated better than ever in this match for me. And it's one of the main reasons why I mentioned in regard to Tim's question that this episode in a way reminded me of those early NXT episodes from Full Sail that we're talking about on NXT 8 years back. This felt like something we would have seen on those to build up Loomis's character. So I, as you guys were talking, I was thinking that, you know, I'm not like, just because of this one match, I'm not like completely 180 on Loomis now. This was just me liking him better than I ever have before. We're finding his act more effective anyway. But I think I agree with Nate that I agree with Nate that he is miscast as a babyface, but I think that it's probably the role you want him in now, because if you're going to keep him on TV and perhaps eventually elevate him, you can elevate him with a significant heel turn against a beloved character. And not only then have you moved him up the ladder, but now you have him in the role that he's supposed to be in anyway. So it's just a win all around if he's going to stay on TV and be effectively presented moving forward, which, you know, you can't have him wrestle Killian Dane every week. So I'm not confident that is going to occur, but at least tonight it was a highlight for me.
Yeah, I didn't set a very high bar for this match, but they easily cleared it, and I found myself enjoying it fairly well. There was one other match, and there was one other segment that I guess we didn't cover, the match being Breezango against Ever-Rise. Ever-Rise are a pretty good team, and I feel like they should get a little more TV time. I don't need them to win. I don't need them to ever win, but I like seeing them in these, even in these little squashes. I think they're fun, and they're suitably annoying. 3 minutes and 31 seconds, Breezango came out to the Mounties music, the Quebecers music, and I think it's funny that they did this nostalgia bit from 27 years ago, but one of the Quebecers is still wrestling and is the world champion of Ring of Honor, unless he lost it and I've forgotten, but I think that he is. So, yeah, Quebecer Pierre.
I always forget that's the same guy.
Yeah, that's it.
I always forget that's the same guy.
Yep. That's what PCO stands for, Pierre-Carl Ouellette. So we got that match, and we got the opening segment. Regal tweeted earlier something cryptic about, it's been a pleasure to be your GM these last number of years. He really made it seem like this big announcement was going to be him leaving his spot. That's what I took from it. Maybe I wasn't supposed to, but whatever. And then the spot was Keith Lee creating opportunity for other wrestlers. There's just a way that he speaks when he's doing his puffed up thing where I'm like, man, that is a heel voice, but whatever, he is who he is. Brizango over Ever-Rise and, Regal and Lee, Tom.
Yeah, and I made sure that I alerted you guys to the tweet in case you might have missed it. Although, like, just in case it was going to become something, and you responded quickly enough that I didn't follow up, but I was thinking of following up, like, probably nothing, but might be something. And, you know, it's just, for as good of a talker as William Regal is, it's far from the first time that one of his tweets has not translated the way I think it did in his mind. So the way it was written and Regal's tweeting history, I was like, I don't know if this means what I think it means, but if it does, I'll share it with the guys just as a heads up. But I love this. Obviously I had issues with titles being combined. You've got a 2-hour program now and a big, what seems like a North American title division, more or less. So I did not like the titles being combined. And I like that if you're going to have this benevolent babyface champion, that he himself is the one to make that decision and do it. And he doesn't want to deprive other people of the opportunities that he himself was afforded. So yeah, I absolutely love this. Granted, when I first learned on Raw that Regal was going to make an announcement on Wednesday, like I always do when they say Regal's going to make an announcement, I'm like, ooh, women's tournament. And we're getting a series of triple threat matches, which I like a whole lot less. But since it's for the North American Championship, I'm all for that. As for the tag match, it was a match, and it happened on my TV screen. And we finally got to see Ever-Rise do their defense chant on TV. I'd only ever seen them do that in dark matches and live events before.
And the audience just went along with the defense chant. I'm like, they're heels. And normally, this audience normally sticks with the plan with faces and heels, but they did the defense chant. And then they also gave Roddy a huge pop when Roderick Strong came out. I was like, did they forget what side of the aisle that he's on? Like, do they all just like him a whole lot? Cause he's a really likable real life guy. I mean, I'm sure they do, but they just totally, I guess they were excited. They were hearing the UE music after a few weeks. Yeah. Brizango and Ever-Rise. All I had to say about it in my recap was, Brizango stays warm for whoever they do the job to next.
Yep.
Nate.
Yeah, pretty much. I'm going to start with the Regal and Keith Lee segments. I originally kind of thought the same thing. Really, William Regal was announcing a retirement, or, you know, he was, you know, especially, you know, with the COVID. I mean, he hasn't been there. I mean, every time we've seen William Regal, you know, it's been through a Zoom call or something along those lines. So, yeah, I was thinking maybe they wanted to be able to have somebody physically in the building or something like that. So I'm glad that that wasn't the case, because as far as I'm concerned, William Regal is the best general manager that has actually been a general manager in WWE. I'll fight you over it. Anyway, so I'm glad that wasn't the case. I am glad that Keith Lee gave up the title, the North American title, because, you know, the whole dual champion thing, we were wondering where that was going to go. We weren't sure how they were going to, you know, book that. I mean, you know, last week they had, I think it was last week, a week before, they booked Dijakovic, against Lee in a winner take all match. And I'm like, well, are they going to keep just booking these matches, you know, winner take all, win both titles. So, you know, I'm glad that they're doing it more this way, because, you know, for exactly the reasons Keith Lee laid out in this video package, he basically said he wants to be able to give other people a chance and other people an opportunity. And that's essentially why I was hoping it would kind of, I was hoping it would get off of Keith Lee somehow, but I don't know why it didn't even occur to me that it might just vacate the title, because I think it kind of does make the most sense in hindsight. He doesn't lose it. He doesn't lose any credibility or anything like that. Keeps him strong with the actual NXT championship. So I'm all good with that. And I like tournaments. So this whole tournament thing going on, it should be fun. Should be fun. So thumbs up there. The Ever-Rise versus Breezango. I loved the whole Mountie thing. All of the Breezango custom entrances are just they're great. Tune in next week to see how they kill Kenny. It's one of those things where it's not necessarily a draw, but it's certainly, a hook to come back and see what's going on. Ever-Rise, they're a team that I've kind of followed for a long time. I've seen them probably at least 6-8 times in the indie scene, in the New England area. Mostly when they were wrestling for Shikara, like the defense chant, something that they've done for years. I really think that they were a great team to go up against Breezango, even though this was just kind of a throwaway match, just to build up Breezango. But I really think they were a great team to do that because they're also really great comedy wrestlers. They're good, good jobbers. They're good, utility guys, but they're also good comedy wrestlers. And I think they played really well off of Breezango tonight, even though that they weren't necessarily playing that comedy, they were allowing Breezango to play the comedy, and kind of play off of that. So I might like this match a little more than most just cause, I've kind of followed Ever-Rise for so long, but I certainly enjoyed it. And like you guys said, this is really just to keep Breezango warm for whoever's up next.
I will also say on the thing that opened the show, I suspected a vacation of the belt, probably a vacating of the belt was probably going to be the way to go. But I was just wondering how they'd handle it because it's really hard to do that without dumping all over the belt. But I really thought they got away with it here with the way that they had Lee handle it as a guy who's just genuinely looking to create opportunity, not to limit opportunity. I mean, yes, he had to do it in his catchphrase because he's got to say what he's got to say. But I thought it was a really good way of maintaining the belt's importance while also getting those two belts away from each other. I thought it was done with as much verve and style as it could have been. Email from Kevin Catani. Salutations, gents. I hope this email finds you well. I thought tonight was a solid show. This week, I have one inside the box and one outside the box question. For the inside the box question, when do you think we'll see Ciampa again? Are they saving him for something or do they have him on the shelf because creative has nothing for him? For the two-part out-of-the-box question, do you see another main roster talent coming over to NXT in the near future? And if yes, who will that be? Thanks as always. Office hours are now over. The Professor, Kevin P. Catani, Ph.D. There's no way they just don't have anything for Ciampa. They're saving him for something. And I think that thing is what I said earlier, which was to renew hostilities with Karrion Kross, perhaps during that match with Keith Lee. For somebody coming over, I guess I hadn't thought about it. I don't think overly often about those hypotheticals, kind of take them as they come. There's a lot of people who could benefit from it, but the idea is to benefit them and to benefit the show. I feel like the first guy who jumps to mind because of the vast difference in presentation would be Ricochet. Tom?
Oh, I love the Ricochet pick. If he wasn't showing back up on Raw more recently, he definitely would have been at the top of my list. Looking up and down the rosters, as so many emails send me to do, this time at the top of my list is Ember Moon, who I believe has rehabbed her injury, but just isn't being used. It's just sort of baffling that they've continued to leave her off TV unless there's an exacerbation of the issue that I am unaware of. Ember Moon, even though in what I believe, and I might be wrong, but I believe the next email that we'll be answering, even though I had a different idea for her there. as for Ciampa, even before we reminded ourselves of the unfinished business with Cross, it seemed clear to me that even though I have no idea what the plan is, that they sent him away with a plan. They're not just going to take somebody like Ciampa and say, yeah, just drive away in your car 1 week and then we'll call you if we have something. This was definitely done with a return plan in mind, and I would not be surprised if that return happens. I guess, you know, our theory now, it's hard to disagree with it, which we had made before and I'll collectively forgot about, is that it would happen during Cross's first title challenge. But I don't think we see Ciampa any later than the first episode of NXT after TakeOver XXX.
All right, Nate, on this email.
Yeah, so as far as Ciampa goes, I mean, that's, you know, that's my answer as well. I mean, I think it's going to be, you know, something to do with Karrion Kross and Keith Lee, you know, that match at TakeOver 30, which I'm still upset it's not TakeOver Boston. Damn you, COVID. I still got to get a refund on my ticket, too, now that I think about it. But that's another story for another day.
Damn you, dumb Americans.
I know, right? I think that's probably where we're going to see Ciampa. If not necessarily right there, I think it is going to be, like Tom said, shortly thereafter. But I can certainly see him kind of coming in and costing Karrion Kross the title win. So that's where I'm putting my money. But we'll see what happens. Then for the main roster talent coming over, you know, I've been kind of trying to think about this for a little bit, and I really like the Ricochet one. I hadn't actually made a pick. I'm like, I'm gonna pick in the moment. I get a couple. I'm scrolling through the roster page here, but I can't think of anybody else off the top of my head, and even just going through the roster, that sticks out to me more than Ricochet. I really would like to see him kind of come back, and now that he's got a little bit more name value from the main roster, even though, you know, I mean, yeah, they didn't really do much with him on the main roster, but he's got that, you know, I guess that main roster supposed shine, I guess. You know, have him come back as a bit of a bigger star and, get in the main event scene, you see if he can, or even in North American title scene. He was North American champion, you know, maybe elevate that title a little bit more. You know, not that it's not already elevated, but you know what I mean. But I do like the Ricochet one. So that's, I'm gonna go with that as well. I'll give you a plus one for that.
And since I'm all about Instagram feeds this week, on the subject of Ciampa, in the meantime, while he's not on our TVs, he is on Instagram working out on his lanai, and the stuff he's doing. I'm not one to like go out of my way to watch workout videos or whatever, but the stuff he's doing, I've never seen anyone work out the way that he works out. It's pretty fascinating, to be honest.
Well, now I'm curious. And I might have to find that out. We got one more email. This is from our friend Jack in Swansea, Wales. Hey guys, hope you're all safe and well. Don't have the typical long question today. Just wanted to know if WWE has another Evolution pay-per-view and there was 5 matches on the card. What women would you pair up for these matches? Dream matches or feuds that are happening today with women from all 3 shows in WWE? I would personally love to see a Candice LeRae versus Sasha Banks match. Also, guys, I agree with you all mostly when it comes to my fellow Welshman Tegan Knox, but I did happen to listen to a podcast that Flash Morgan Webster had done with her a month or so ago and thought it was very good and would highly recommend to anyone. Stay safe, wear a mask, Jack A. from Swansea, Wales. This question only came in today, less than 12 hours ago, and I didn't see it for many hours later because I don't usually check it until shortly before I'm about to do this show, to be honest. But Tom did, and I know that he booked a show, and I'm interested to hear, and I'm particularly interested because I'm going to be honest, until about 10 minutes ago, I forgot that Ember Moon existed. That's how much they've used her. So I might not be ready to answer this one because I don't have the current talent on the brain. Tom, what's your Evolution show?
I love that that Jack emailed us and said, "Hey guys, I don't have a long one for you this week, but book a fantasy pay-per-view."
Right?
But Jack, I love these sorts of things, so I thought, "Yep, I am gonna do that." And regarding the Tegan thing, just real quick, yeah, I noticed she was on The Bump this morning too. But you know what? I don't watch The Bump. I'm sure she's been on other podcasts too that I haven't listened to. I'm sure, I am confident that Tegan Knox is a more dynamic, interesting person than they present on TV. And I've been talking about Instagram feeds all episode. I am drawn to those, so I am drawn into the character on TV. They need to tell us who Tegan Knox is on TV, and then I'll be more interested to seek out things like a Flash Morgan Webster podcast or to watch her segment on The Bump. So, fantasy booking evolution 2. Charlotte Flair opens my event with a spotlighted promo about the women's evolution. And the lights come up to reveal, and then I list a whole bunch of women that I like but didn't book on the show, but I won't bore you with the whole list. All of them are cheering for the event, and at one point, Rhea Ripley plants herself next to Charlotte and gives the queen some serious side eye with a smirk. Doesn't go anywhere, but it's a seed. The first match is SmackDown champion Carmella versus a mystery challenger. The mystery is revealed to be Ember Moon, who wins the championship in a classically formatted but energetic opener, with Carmella ultimately feeding for all of Ember's signature moves. And it signals it signals good things for Ember. I hope she has a good run with my fantasy title. Next up is the 10-woman breakout battle royal, the events of which are as follows. Giant of the match, Kavita DeVee, eliminates the showboat, Brianna Brandi, then the trash-talking Karen Q. Kavita is then eliminated by the combined acrobatic efforts of Catalina, Caden Carter, and Casey Catanzaro. Immediately afterward, Catalina and Caden are simultaneously dumped out by Jessamyn Duke, who goes on to eliminate Rita Reyes to score the most eliminations of the match. Raquel Gonzalez then eliminates Indy Hartwell, then Jessamyn soon after. So it comes down to Catanzaro and Gonzalez, who double the match length going head-to-head, with Gonzalez going over definitively. In the middle of the show, we get Bayley with Sasha at ringside, putting over Mako Satomura, whose one-off presence is treated with prestige the same way Liger's was when he came in to face Tyler Breeze. In the sub-main, after spending a good amount of TV time on the build, I am running back Raw champion Shayna Baszler versus Kairi Sane one final time, with Asuka and the Horsewomen barred from ringside, and Kairi's one-off return will serve as a proper farewell for her. Then we main event with Io Shirai defending her title against Dakota Kai. Kai manages the upset by victimizing Shirai with kicks to the head, similar to how Del Rio did his double turn against Ziggler after Ziggler's Money in the Bank cash-in and subsequent concussion issues. Dakota is joined by breakout Battle Royal winner Raquel Gonzalez to celebrate. Then, after hoisting Dakota on her shoulders, Gonzalez turns on Dakota with a one-armed powerbomb, and the show closes with Gonzalez standing over Dakota and admiring the title belt. That turn should not happen that early in Dakota's run, but I've only been given the book for one show, so there it is.
Okay, so a few things. With Dakota Kai winning the main event, this is obviously a show I want to see. Reyna, you're dead to me. but what? Your alternative timeline is no longer somebody I can deal with. I will say, nice to see Ember back, but I don't know that if you come back from major injury, you want to be in there with somebody as sloppy as Carmella. It's a gamble. It's a gamble. Like, she might survive it, but you never know. I wasn't surprised to hear a battle royal in there. I love the idea of a breakout battle royal. That to me is like what a battle royal, because battle royals are the perfect place to elevate. I'm always annoyed when a battle royal just lets us know what we already knew and somebody obvious goes over. I like it. I like the the elevation aspect of them. Sane versus Baszler.
And putting a battle royal on a show, like on a fantasy card like this, feels like a cheat just to get more people on the show that I wish I could have booked otherwise. So I definitely wanted to do something more special with it.
And I was going to call the Sane Baszler match a cheat because it's like, we already know how good that's going to be.
Right.
But,
and,
they
did last evolution.
Right. Right. And, I love the idea of the Satomura one-off with Bailey, a la Jushin Liger and Tyler Breeze. That was so massive for somebody like me who watches New Japan and watched New Japan the first time when Liger was very young. And was doing some work here in the States in WCW as well. Nate, I don't know that you had a I know you can't top Dakota Kai winning the main event, but what can you offer?
So you know what? I gotta say my evolution is going to be a tough show to follow after Tom's evolution too. But this is what I put together. Now I don't really have any crazy, you know, segments in the middle. I just put together a card because, you know, hey, I also look at the emails shortly before we go on the air, and this is what I scribbled down between the end of NXT and before we started recording tonight. So without further ado, the opening match, just because I thought this would be a cool, fun match to see, Alexa Bliss versus Shotzi Blackheart. Completely different personalities, a little, you know, different ring style, but I think that'd be just a fun match to watch. And that's really what the mindset that I went into building this card was. I wasn't really going in with stories or I wouldn't say that. I got a couple things in mind, but you know, it was mostly just what I think would be cool to see. So opening up with Alexa Bliss for Shotzi Blackheart. Then the second match of the night would be for the NXT women's title. I'm going to still have Io Shirai as my champion. However, she's going to be defending against Mercedes Martinez with the Robert Stone brand in her corner. I'd say, yeah, we'll have Aaliyah and Robert Stone out there just, you know, cheering her on. Yeah, I didn't book finishes or anything like that either. Like I said, Tom's, I can't. It's hard to follow. The next match, the middle, I guess, main event, if you want to call it that, would be for the WWE Women's SmackDown title, Bayley versus Rhea Ripley. We'll move on then and go for the Raw Women's title in the second to last match of the night, Asuka versus Bianca Belair. And the main event that I have booked would be Ronda Rousey versus Shayna Baszler. I think that would be fun to see in the WWE environment.
I don't think we've ever seen Bianca versus Asuka. That's got me intrigued.
Yeah.
When you said Rhea versus Bayley, I was like, there's your match of the show. And then you immediately followed it up with that. I would watch that show.
Yeah.
I would too. Yeah.
Bianca. It's, it's some fun stuff. Thank you for sending the email. I wish I had seen it earlier. Nate, for playing. In a way, you're both winners. In a more correct way, Tom is the winner. I am Kelly Wells. You can find me all over social media at Spooky Milk. I am the host of this show, PWT Talks NXT. I'm the host of NWA 10 Pounds of Talk, if they ever come back. Billy Corgan sure thinks they're going to, but Billy Corgan is friends with Alex Jones. Who knows what's in that guy's head? That's who I am. Follow me all over social media at Spooky Milk. Tom, who are you?
Billy Corgan is friends with Alex Jones. Oh, my goodness. I mean, it's
don't go down that rabbit hole, man.
Simultaneously disgusting and not surprising at all. Changes my thoughts on the I guess it's not the last one anymore, but one of the last Smashing Pumpkins records being named Zeitgeist. I like that album too. I am Tom Staupe. If I can remember that, I am Tom Staupe, and I will talk to you guys on Saturday on NXT 8 years back. If you are a VIP member, Kelly, do you remember, do we know what some of the matches are that we're going to be talking about this Saturday?
I don't remember what this main event was going to be. I don't think this is one where they told us, because the last one was that idiotic main event of Usos versus Primetime Players, which was just like they decided to show us the live main event that never should have made air. So I don't think they gave us any idea. But all we know is that we still got the McGillicuddy and Tyson Kidd feud going strong.
Yes, so. Indeed.
All right, Nate, who are you?
All right, I am at Nate Lindberg on Twitter. As I said earlier in the night, I write the NXT Hits and Misses column, which you guys should see on the website, pwtorch.com, at some point either tomorrow or Thursday, as you guys will listen to today, I'm sure, or Friday. So check it out when it does drop. And like I said earlier, too, I also launched a homepage for everything me because, hey, I'm vain. NateLindberg.com. I've got links to this show, my other show, and a whole bunch of other stuff. So check it out. I spent like 4 hours on it, but it looks great.
It's snazzy.
It's snazzy. That definitely is a real thing that we really say. All right, folks, we will see you in 7. Cheers.